Other people are not medicine.
Treat your career like a bad boyfriend. Once, I was sleeping on an Amtrak train to New York and was startled by a thud. Someone had dumped a script into my lap as they prepared to get off the train. I woke to a kind-faced businessman smiling at me apologetically. He looked at me like we were friends. I was immediately enraged. The script was for a movie called I Don't Know, because I threw it away. I was angry for a few reasons. I don't like it when people wake me up. Being a bad sleeper, I have a hard time opening my eyes. I am amazed at people who wake up and talk like normal humans. These are the same people who don't thrash around when they sleep and have never been told that they snore like a dragon. I was also angry because I don't like to be solicited. My years of living in New York City have made me very sensitive to the random encounter. When I walk down the street and someone asks me, excuse me, can I ask you a question? I immediately put my hand up and firmly say, no. No one needs to ask me a question. There is no reason to talk to strangers. I don't want you to hand me your homemade CD or talk to me on an airplane or try to upsell me on drink specials. As I get older, I get a real pleasure from maintaining boundaries with strangers. I have come to enjoy telling the cheese guy at the farmer's market that he does not value my time. I like letting my massage therapist know that she's putting her needs before my own. It may be difficult to tell my family I feel pressure to entertain them, but it's easy to tell the UPS guy that he needs to respect my personal space. When someone randomly hands me a script, it means I have already disappointed them. I don't like disappointing people. Some would say this is codependent behavior, which I have discovered is a term that explains how most everyone acts all of the time unless one is a sociopath or a Russian computer that plays chess. Plus, when someone hands me a script, it only reminds me of how I should write more scripts and get my shit together and stop sleeping on trains. And I don't care that you add an attached note that says, my wife and I are lawyers by day, but screenwriters by night, and we think you could act in /produce/direct/rewrite this with us. I'm not impressed when you assure me that the story has lots of twists and turns. I doubt it does, and how dare you? See? I'm not as nice as you think I am. Being a working actor whom people recognize sometimes means you occasionally get the young up-and-comer who thinks that meeting you is their chance to break in. The good version of this meeting is when someone tells you they are inspired by you and hoping to follow in your footsteps. This makes your heart warm, and it also gives you just enough of an inflated sense of self to justify eating an entire bag of Doritos later that evening and eventually falling asleep with your hands down your pants. The bad version of this meeting is when someone hands you something or asks you to do something for them or announces loudly that you better remember their name because you're going to be famous one day. Good or bad, the reality is most people become famous or get great jobs after a very, very long tenure shoveling shit and not because they handed their script to someone on the street. People still think they'll be discovered in the malt shop, even though no one can tell you what a malt is anymore. Everyone wants to believe that they will be the regular guy from Sioux City who becomes a reluctant movie star despite his best attempts to remain a sensitive tattoo artist. People don't want to hear about the 15 years of waiting tables and doing small shows with your friends until one of them gets a little more famous and they convince people to hire you, and then you get paid and you work hard and spend time getting better and making more connections and friends. Boring. It's much more interesting to believe that every person who makes it in show business just wrote a check to their mother when they were 18 for $1 million with an instruction to cash in a year. I was never great in auditions. When I was nervous, I would often underprepare and act too cool for school. I would try to reject them before they rejected me, which was confusing since I had decided to audition and acted angry to be there. I remember one particular time I auditioned for a Coen Brothers film. I realized I was doing a pretty shitty job, and I overcompensated by also acting like a dick. The Coen Brothers were very nice, I think. I've blocked it all out. It took me a while to step out of my comfort zone and put my neck out to audition for something. College was filled with small parts in big musical productions. What's Her Name in Brigadoon, Who's Her Face in Midsummer Night's Dream, That Lady in That Other Play. All small and usually comical, all satisfying in their low level of risk. I surfed in a very cool and confident zone, and my ego was snugly and warm in a sleeping bag of safe choices. Then I moved to Chicago, and the shit hit the fan. I started going on cold auditions, the kind where your agent sends you in and you have no idea why. The worst auditions were what we called bite and smiles. This is when you go in for a Wendy's spot and you just have to pretend to eat something and smile. No words, just the simple fact of presenting your face to the camera and hoping someone likes it. I had the presence of mind even then to know that I would never book one of these. One, my teeth were kind of jacked up, and that never bodes well in close-ups. And two, I don't have symmetrical good looks, and therefore I like to think that my personality is my currency. I remember a Chicago casting director asking me to pretend to bite into something and then smile. I did my best, and I was about to leave when the casting director asked me to stay and put something on tape. I got excited. Maybe she saw potential in me. Maybe I would finally get to play the blue-collar white girl arsonist on my favorite show of all time, Law & Order. Instead, she asked me to sit on a stool and tell her my most embarrassing moment. I asked why. She said she just wanted to have some tape of me talking. I asked her if I could talk about something else, and she shook her head and said, "Tell me your most embarrassing moment." And I said, "No." And she never called me again. Quick note here. Everybody wants you to share your most embarrassing moment all the time, and I am here to tell you that you don't have to. You don't have to tell it or tweet it or Instagram it. You don't have to put it in a book or share it with anyone who doesn't feel safe and protective of your heart. More cold auditions followed, and none amounted to much. Almost every job I've ever gotten was due to someone knowing my work or seeing me in something else. I was in UCB, and Andy Richter suggested I do stuff for Conan. Being on Conan helped me land a part in Deuce Bigelow. My UCB television show and friends helped me get an audition for SNL. My SNL connections resulted in Parks and Recreation. See, years and years of hard work and little bits of progress isn't nearly as entertaining as imagining me telling a joke in a Boston food court when suddenly Lorne Michaels walks up and says, "I must have you for a little show I do." I once was having dinner with my old friend back when I was on SNL. Baby Mama was coming out, and I was in the middle of one of those weird press pushes where your face is on taxis and you're doing talk shows all the time. My friend, who was as funny and talented as me but chose not to be an actor, was talking about how he was seeing my face everywhere. He went on and on about how weird that was. He pointed out that people were really starting to know my name and asked me if I could believe it. "Yes," I said. I'd worked for over a decade to get to this moment. I hadn't just dropped my script into someone's lap on a train. "Can you?" I asked him. But I was lucky. Your career and your passion don't always match up. Plenty of talented people don't have the careers they want. Plenty of untalented people make millions and make movies. There's a difference between determination and talent. Hard work doesn't always matter. You can be the best at making contacts and going after jobs, but then suddenly you want it too much. Suddenly everybody feels how bad you want it, and they don't want to give it to you. Even at 6 years old, Archie is learning to stop paying attention to the toy he wants. He knows that if he lets on how bad he wants it, his 4-year-old brother will snatch that shiz up in a hot second. Pretending to not want something can work. Really not caring if you get it takes a lifetime of practice. I guess the Buddhists would call this idea healthy detachment. Too often, we are told to visualize what we want and cut out pictures of it and repeat it like a mantra over and over again. Books and magazines tell us to create vision boards. Late-night commercials remind us that anything is possible. Positive affirmations are written on our tea bags. I'm introducing a new idea. Try to care less. Practice ambivalence. Learn to let go of wanting it. Treat your career like a bad boyfriend. Here's the thing. Your career won't take care of you. It won't call you back or introduce you to its parents. Your career will openly flirt with other people while you are around. It will forget your birthday and wreck your car. Your career will blow you off if you call it too much. It's never going to leave its wife. Your career is fucking other people and everyone knows but you. Your career will never marry you. Now, before I extend this metaphor, let me make a distinction between career and creativity. Creativity is connected to your passion, the light inside you that drives you, that joy that comes when you do something you love, that small voice that tells you, I like this, do this again, you are good at it, keep going. This is the juicy stuff that lubricates our lives and helps us feel less alone in the world. Your creativity is not a bad boyfriend. It's a really warm, older Hispanic lady who has a beautiful laugh and loves to hug. And if you are even a little bit nice to her, she will make you feel great and maybe cook you delicious food. Career is different. Career is the stringing together of opportunities and jobs. Mix in public opinion and past regrets. Add a dash of future panic and a whole lot of financial uncertainty. Career is something that fools you into thinking you are in control and then takes pleasure in reminding you that you aren't. Career is the thing that will not fill you up and never make you truly whole. Depending on your career is like eating cake for breakfast and wondering why you start crying an hour later. I was on a panel once with the genius writer David Simon. I think The Wire is the best written show in recent memory. I've watched every episode of all 5 seasons twice. For Mother's Day one year, Aziz Ansari got me a signed and framed picture of Omar Little with the inscription, Amy, you come at the king, you best not miss, Omar. Next to my children and my blood diamonds, this is the only thing I would grab in a fire. A nice young person stood up at the panel and asked David and me how we found the courage to do what we do. We both bristled a bit at the idea of our work being courageous. We both admitted that we often think about how if everything went away tomorrow, we would still have a trade and a skill to depend on. He could go back to reporting, a career he started in, and I could go teach improvisation at the UCB Theater or choreograph dance for child pageants, a path I am interested in pursuing at a later date. Either way, we both agreed that ambivalence is key to success. I will say it again, ambivalence is key. You have to care about your work, but not about the result. You have to care about how good you are and how good you feel, but not about how good people think you are or how good people think you look. I realize this is extremely difficult. I'm not saying I'm particularly good at it. I'm like you, or maybe you're better at this than I am. You will never climb Career Mountain and get to the top and shout, I made it! You will rarely feel done or complete or even successful. Most people I know struggle with that complicated soup of feeling slighted on one hand and like a total fraud on the other. Our ego is a monster that loves to sit at the head of the table, and I've learned that my ego is just as rude and loud and hungry as everyone else's. It doesn't matter how much you get, you are left wanting more. Success is filled with MSG. Ambivalence can help tame the beast. Remember, your career is a bad boyfriend. It likes it when you don't depend on it. It will reward you every time you don't act needy. It will chase you if you act like other things, passion, friendship, family, longevity, are more important to you. If your career is a bad boyfriend, it's healthy to remember you can always leave and go sleep with somebody else.